A week ago, Secretary of State John Kerry traveled to Hollywood for a sit-down with studio chiefs. His tweet from the meeting included this: good to hear their perspectives and ideas of how to counter the DASH narrative. And narrative is just the point my guest wants to make today. He says it's key to defeating ISIS. With us is Lieutenant Colonel Brian Steed. He's a military historian at the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College up at Fort Leavenworth, and he's a specialist on the Middle East. He speaks tonight at the Kansas City Public Library. And Brian, so good to have you here. Welcome to Up to Date.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, Secretary Kerry on the right track here, because here he is traveling to Hollywood to talk about how to counter the Islamic State. It sounds like the propaganda campaigns that the U.S. used to wage in World War II.
Okay, well, that's a great question. I think, in a way, he is on the right track. I think it is a good discussion that they're having on narrative. So, first and foremost, it's good. There's always, I guess, well, maybe not always, but usually a but. And the but is the concern is on counter-narrative rather than on U.S. narrative.
And what is the difference?
Well, counter-narrative would be we're opposing. It's like defense rather than offense.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than focusing on how to stop the Daesh or ISIS narrative, I would argue that what they should be talking about is how to promote the U.S. narrative.
Ah.
What is it that we're asking people to do? What is it that we want our partner countries, the coalition countries, what are we asking them to sacrifice for? Other than just to stop the bad guys, what's the positive that we're trying to accomplish?
But so far you're saying what we're hearing out of the administration is that they're pushing a counter-narrative, the more negative approach.
Well, to a degree, yes. What it has taken us a long time to get to even a discussion on narrative at all. And so the fact that we're talking about narrative and recognizing that Daesh functions so effectively within a narrative space, and that they that in fact is where they do the majority of their efforts. Well, we actually oftentimes in the military will talk about decisive operations. So their decisive operation is narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the violence. So the discussion on narrative is really important. The challenge that what I often try to pull people away from is the discussion solely on focusing on opposing their narrative rather than communicating our own narrative. Because I would make the argument that the United States of America has maybe the greatest narrative in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that sometimes smacks of American exceptionalism, but there is a lot of truth to that. People
mm-hmm.
come to this country because here they can achieve arguably whatever they want. Now, it's not perfect, and there are a lot of problems. I was at a program about a month ago down in Leawood at the Church of the Resurrection.
Sure.
And in that program, we had a panel discussion, and one of the panel members was a member of the local Muslim community, and she made the comment that for her, she can worship better as a Muslim in America than she could in the country of her parents' origin. So a lot of times we miss that, the positive message.
Right.
So what I would have loved for that discussion to have consisted of is how is it we can be promoting our narrative, why we are a positive partner for the world. Now, your point earlier was, does this smack of World War II propaganda? And the challenge is, how do you do the one without going to the other?
Mm-hmm. Hey, I wonder, how much do we know about what the Secretary Kerry talked about with the Hollywood chiefs? I mean, and how much would you have liked to have been a fly in the wall in that room that day?
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that room.
I
do not know. And in fact, because I am still developing my social media footprint, so probably by the end of this week, I will have a Twitter account. But up to this point, I have not followed any of the tweeting regarding that event. So this was your comment was the first time I've heard that. So
you also say, Brian, that there are two kinds of narrative, permanent and transient. Help me understand that.
Okay, so the idea in talking about that or dividing it is to get at this idea that it isn't just about the media pushing out a message, that we have to recognize that that is simply a transient narrative, that what we hear every day is part of this transient noise to some degree. But that message, whether it's received or rejected, will be based off of a permanent narrative that people exist with. Sometimes sociologists might refer to that as identity, mm-hmm. But it's how we filter information. It's how we perceive the world. So if we see the United States of America as a country that values rule of law, for example, then when we hear a narrative that comes out about somebody breaking the law, immediately they will be portrayed in our mind as a bad person
mm-hmm.
because we filter it that way. So the challenge in communicating narrative, whether it's a counter narrative or a positive narrative, is we have to recognize what is the pre-existing permanent narrative that exists within the area that we're trying to influence. So if that's the Middle East, then what is the pre-existing mm-hmm. permanent narrative there? And then we can better focus what our narrative is going to be to recognize how it will be received or why it might be rejected.
Do you have any sense if the American military has a grasp on what that permanent narrative is in the Middle East?
Well, much like with Secretary Kerry, we are doing a much better job in recognizing the influence and importance of narrative. We still are challenged with having a full understanding of how people perceive the information that we send out. So I would say we're moving in the right direction, but we certainly are not at the destination yet in terms of fully understanding that permanent narrative.
You know, I'm wondering about Vietnam, Brian, and is that an example of where we failed to grasp the narrative, or even if maybe we came to understand it way too late, what's your sense of Vietnam?
That's such a great question. It's very appropriate because tomorrow I will be teaching the second class with students on the Vietnam War.
You try to be helpful here at Up to Date, Brian.
There you go. It's like right on what we're talking about. I think Vietnam does get, and I would, as we talk with the students and have this discussion about the role of narrative, we talk about how warfare changes over time. And one of the things that we see in Vietnam is this conflict with how the American military saw war and how our opponent saw warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very much in opposition.
Yes.
So they had a permanent narrative that was nationalistic, that they were trying to establish something that was very aspirational. And we saw this as being primarily motivated by communism and so political ideology rather than a national identity.
And we failed to grasp, as a result, just how aggressive and determined the enemy was in that war, and it cost us dearly, right?
Certainly how determined they were and how committed they were to their cause. And yes, I think the mistake in recognizing their commitment clearly played a role in some of our decisions
mm-hmm.
and what we believed it would take to win that war, or whether it was even a war worth fighting at the very beginning. So I think Vietnam is representative of part of the challenges with recognizing narrative that we have gone through, certainly is by saying we, in this case, the U.S. military.
I'm visiting this morning with Ryan Steed. He's a military historian at the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College up at Fort Leavenworth. We're talking this morning about the importance of narrative as a way to counter the push of ISIS overseas. I should point out that Brian will be presenting Mesopotamia on Fire, Changing the Conversation on ISIS, tonight at the Kansas City Central Library. Things kick off with a reception at 6 o'clock. The program begins at 6:30. You can reserve a seat at kclibrary.org. Again, this is 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. When it comes to ISIS, we were talking about permanent narrative just a minute ago, Brian. How would you describe the permanent narrative right now when it comes to ISIS, at least from their standpoint overseas?
Okay. ISIS is, they're a fascinating organization in that they are different from a lot of the other groups that we tend to lump them with. One significant difference is with al-Qaeda. ISIS sees themselves as the army of the righteous that is fighting an end-of-days battle that will have its culmination in a place called Dabiq, which is north of the city of Aleppo, close to the Turkish border in Syria, which is a lot like the Battle of Armageddon in sort of Christian Sunday school lesson in the book
times.
Of Revelation. So in this sense, they actually believe that Jesus will come again and will lead their army once they get to this battle to achieve success in this final day's battle. Now, that's sort of the end of this story. And where they see themselves right now is that they are the preparatory army that's supposed to create the environment wherein those end of days happens. And they draw on some historical narratives that talk about this army of the righteous rising in Syria, spreading into Mesopotamia. It talks about tremendous success, but also within that narrative, there are defeats that will happen. So at the time at which they are fighting in Dabiq, they're not doing well, is how the story goes. And then so when Jesus arrives, he actually saves them from defeat. So part of the challenge in their narrative is built in this sense of both success and defeat. So even if they start to lose places, as they have over the last year, it's not outside their narrative. They can consistently play the message that, look, this is still fulfilling what has been prophesied and what has been expected. You know, come join us. In fact, you know, if they are getting defeated more, they could even make the call that the times are coming even faster. So that's part of the challenge of dealing with them is recognizing how that message resonates. Additionally, they are also seeing themselves, because a lot of times people focus on just the apocalyptic aspect and think, well, if it's just the end of days, then why do they care about a state? And for them, establishing what they call a caliphate, which a caliphate is sort of, if you think of it as a kingdom is to a king, what a caliphate is to a caliph, then the caliph is a successor of the prophet. And so the prophet Muhammad is viewed in Islam as the last prophet. And so anyone else who follows and leads the faithful is just a successor to him. And so they believe that they have also established that caliphate, so a state, an area of governance for the righteous to come and to congregate and to build. And so to them, there is not an incongruity between this notion of a state today and an apocalyptic end of days battle tomorrow.
Wow.
So they're trying to do both simultaneously.
And the U.S. narrative right now is what?
Well, that is a really good question. Other than, I think, first of all, we have a very powerful counter narrative that depicts these guys as evil. The challenge that we have is when it's not a scientific survey, but for the last 5 years or so, I've been asking sort of this impromptu survey question of audiences I speak to of what is the U.S. narrative? And mostly people will give me the negative narrative, which is, you know, defeat ISIS. And I'm like, okay, but what is our positive narrative? And usually then, silence is the response. So part of what we haven't done is craft this positive narrative of why it is we should be fighting them, what positive option we offer the people for our own country, the people of the region where we're fighting, or the people globally to fight this, other than that these guys are bad.
As we talk about these narratives and what the U.S. is doing, how are we broadcasting this narrative? How are we transmitting it overseas?
We have some official government sites. So there are folks out there who are tweeting. There are folks out there who are doing websites, and there are YouTube videos, and there are all sorts of semi-official and official groups. There are lots and lots of anti-ISIS bloggers and Twitter users. I'm not quite sure what the
Twitterers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then and people posting YouTube stuff that is totally just grassroots emergent phenomenon and folks who are opposing him. So that's all really impressive. And a lot of that comes from the region. So the Arab world is provided a lot. What is intriguing in the sense of how we broadcast the message that also gets into popular media is we broadcast quite broadly images about ourselves mm-hmm. that when viewed from a foreign perspective, and I lived overseas for 8.5 years, and part of that time I was actually serving as part of an exchange program with a foreign military. So I was an officer in a foreign army. And so I would watch media sort of as if I were a foreigner. Mm. And what we say about ourselves is not very positive. Mm-hmm. You know, right now while I'm running on a treadmill every morning, I'm watching bits and pieces of the Bourne movies. And and when you look at that—
Love those movies.
I do too.
Yeah.
But yet, who are the bad guys?
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
the United States government. And that's a regular thing in a lot of films. And regardless of what you think about the United States government, it's pretty sure that we're not as bad as we portray ourselves in movies. And so part of how we broadcast a message is we're broadcasting messages that are not very positive, and that harms how we're seen abroad as well.
I wonder about the responsibility, Brian, on the average citizen out there to, you know, get better as citizens in terms of learning more of what the ISIS narrative is. Do we all have a responsibility on this front?
Absolutely. I think, first of all, as citizens of Republican democracy, we have a responsibility to know what our government does in our name abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to emphasize that I am actually speaking just as a citizen. I'm not a spokesman for the government in this interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's so important that citizens know what the country does in their name. But secondly—
Is that information, in your view, is it available out there? I mean, people have all kinds of views of the mainstream media and the accuracy of it and what's being put out. Is that information gettable?
Yes, it is. But it actually is kind of hard. One of the first messages I usually give when I present on ISIS, and you'll hear it tonight if you come, is that I will say that everything you hear, everything you read on ISIS is some degree of wrong, that no one gets them 100% right 100% of the time. I read pretty widely. This morning I read, I don't know, 12, 15 articles on wow. ISIS. From a variety of different sources, and they all provide great information, or some provide great information, mm-hmm. but they all provide information that you can use to put together a puzzle of what's provided. But it is difficult to piece together which is the truth and which is the fiction, which gets back to that earlier question about the importance of our role of understanding this. Because sometimes we get very caught up. Right now, there's a debate between the FBI and Apple.
Right.
I think of the product iTunes, which is probably the number one Apple product I use.
Yeah.
But about security versus privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was driving into this interview, I heard on this radio station a discussion about how ISIS people are killing Americans everywhere. Well, that's just not true. And so the hype that exists about these guys with respect to the rhetoric is a challenge for all of us to understand. Yes, they're bad folks, and yes, they need to be defeated.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, they currently are not an existential threat to the United States of America. And so most American citizens need to keep this within its proper perspective. We just had an Uber driver kill almost as many people as a couple of individuals who were freelancers for ISIS did in San Bernardino. And I'm not so sure that people are going to be trying to ban Uber with the same vehemence. And I'm not, once again—
Well, it's difficult to keep ISIS in perspective when you have a raging presidential campaign that tends to paint in very broad strokes everything these days, including what you're talking about here with ISIS.
Absolutely. And you're right. And that is a problem and a challenge. And presidential campaigns tend to expand certain things. And this, I think, is true of every presidential campaign beyond what they really are.
Yeah.
And I think they need to be stopped. I just also think we need to keep our heads about us with respect to how we treat particularly Muslims within the United States of America, and even how we uphold our values as we look abroad. That the idea of creating an environment within this country where citizens of this country do not feel welcomed or do not feel that they have the equal opportunities as right. other citizens is a horribly dangerous environment. And I just think we need to do everything possible to avoid that.
You know, if we're going to win this type of war, Brian, what will it take to change the permanent narrative of those who lead or follow ISIS enough to affect the course of events here? What has to happen?
That is a very profound question that I am still trying to puzzle through. I don't know that I have the simple answer, but I think first and foremost, we need to recognize that we are fighting a competition of narrative, that this is...
And that idea isn't very widely grasped yet, I would venture to say.
No, I just threw out a paper recently that tried to get at this idea of what I refer to as maneuver in the narrative space to communicate to policymakers and military professionals this idea of how to promote ourselves to conduct this fight and do so in the narrative space. Not to say that there isn't a component of violence or a component of what we do best in the sense of what some guys refer to as kinetic operations, but dropping bombs, shooting bullets, those sort of things. We do that very well. And there's a component of narrative space maneuver that is kinetic. But that is not the decisive component. So what we will need to do is we need to flip our way of thinking about conflict completely over, make it like an upside down cake in the sense of we need to think about the narrative first, and then we need to reinforce that narrative with our actions. A good friend of mine refers to this as linking words, deeds, and images in sort of like a braid, so that how we act, what we say, what we show, or what people see of what we do is combined into a focused communication of how we want to fight this. So if we say that these guys are the ultimate evil, then we need to behave like they are. And if we're not going to behave like they are, then we need to probably change our words. So our words, our deeds, our images need to work together. And as we do that, I think we can become more successful. But I will be the first to say this is still a theory in progress.
Final question. How will we know when we've won this propaganda battle?
And that is another great question. I think unlike previous wars, World War II, the U.S. Civil War, it will be very different. But I think what we will see is a world that is different than the world that is right now. And so
it's going to take some time.
Yes, it will take time. And I think it may take more than a decade. It depends how quickly we change to fighting it the right way. That said, I think what we will see is we'll see a world where you don't have organizations like ISIS, like Al-Qaeda, who are conducting terrorist operations multi-regionally or globally. You're still going to have bad actors inside countries, and that's probably going to be forever. I mean, human beings have always had that.
But you think we can get there ultimately?
Well, I'm an American enough to be optimistic, and I think that once we put our mind to something— I mean, I think we can do anything.
Lieutenant Colonel Brian Steed is a military historian at the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth. He's a specialist on the Middle East. Again, he speaks this evening at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Central Branch Public Library, 14 West 10th Street. To grab a seat, go to kclibrary.org. Brian, I really enjoyed having you. Thanks very much for the good conversation.
Thank you, Steve.